listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
This is the Tennis.com podcast. I'm Ed McGrogan, back once again with Steve Tigner. I want to catch up on all the various happenings, as always, on the tours. But, you know, Steve, before we get into really the home stretch of the WTA season in particular, but, you know, the men's season is heading that way also, it's quickly become apparent over the past few weeks that we're witnessing something pretty extraordinary from Novak Djokovic. This year just continues to look more impressive after every week, and you know, since we last got together, he went through the Chinese stretch of the tour season by winning two titles and not losing not losing a set along the way. And he even called it the best stretch of tennis he's played ever, I believe. Is that correct, or did I read that wrong?
He said, officially, he said it's the best I've played back-to-back weeks.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. So, still quite a statement to make, considering when you think of some of his Grand Slam runs before.
Yeah, pretty good. You know, he knows this is a peak, I think.
Yeah, and you know, where I think for a while, at least, I had the opinion that, you know, his 2011 season was really untoppable unless, you know, he happened to win the actual calendar year Grand Slam. You know, that, of course, was put to the side way back in May and June at Roland Garros. But, you know, not quietly by any means, but, you know, sort of brick by brick, Djokovic is putting together already a season that has eclipsed his 2011 in wins. He has one fewer loss at this point. And, you know, the big thing is, you know, it's more it's more sustained from beginning to end. As, you know, in 2011, it was, I think, just more forceful when it from January to the U.S. Open than we really didn't see much of Djokovic after. A lot of injuries played into that, fatigue. And this year, that's not the case at all.
Yeah, he seems more, you know, that was the first year he was number one, the first year where he really passed Nadal and Federer. And I feel like, you know, he just doing that and winning those three slams, he won the first 41 matches of the year. You know, maybe he hadn't settled in and didn't, you know, he like you said, he was injured at the end of the year. He also seemed to just run out of gas mentally. But this year, you know, he's done the full year at number one now. This will be the fourth time. So he's totally settled in. You know, he's playing through the full year the way, you know, the way Federer did in his prime years, winning all the way until the end. And Djokovic has been doing that in recent years. So, you know, I think this is the better year. He says it's better. And, you know, it's hard to argue. You got to the final of the French this year, was one match from the Grand Slam. Has lost one time before a final, you know. It's a lot like Federer's 2006. I didn't really think it was Federer's 2006 could be topped without winning the Grand, you know, without winning all four majors. But Djokovic, at least for right now, has matched it. We'll have to see how he finishes. Federer finished by winning the World Tour Finals. You know, we see if Djokovic can do that. He's won the last three, so that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, you know, I actually want to make perhaps a devil's advocate type point about really both of those comparisons. First, before we get to Federer, which was the focus of your piece this week, you know, the one thing I do want to say about Djokovic's 2011 season that in a way, it's hard for me to at this point to call that season superior to, you know, 2011 better than 2015, especially because Djokovic himself came out and said it, like, this is the better year. But the one thing you can't forget about 2011 was this was, you know, right after a peak Rafael Nadal year where the dynamic between those two had clearly gone in Rafa's favor. Djokovic had not been able to solve Rafa on clay to that point, and he goes out and not only beats him on clay. He beats him twice. He beats him in four other finals, including Indian Wells, Miami, U.S. Open, Wimbledon. And the one thing I remember about Djokovic's 2011 season is, you know, this, and this kind of goes back to what I'm saying about sustained excellence and you know, as compared to, you know, just moments. Djokovic, I think at that season was playing more aggressive than he is now. You know, I think hitting with a little more abandon at that point. But, you know, maybe the way that 2011 season kind of petered out at the end, you know, what perhaps Djokovic may have taken away from that, besides a lot of titles and a lot, you know, the number one ranking, is that, you know, comparing 2011 to now, you're definitely seeing a different game that he's playing. And I think that really the way he views his game and how he needs to play to have these sustained years, you know, his ambitions are very high. Every time you see a quote from him, he really has the top goal in mind at all times. And I think his game changed because of that. And I think you're seeing possibly the best refinement of it.
Yeah, maybe it's a little like Federer when he was number one for a couple of years. He stopped trying to be as spectacular as he was. Not that Djokovic has ever played that way exactly, but maybe Djokovic has learned to sort of pace himself through a year, figuring that he's going to be number one. You know, he may not have even thought that in 2011. You know, now he sort of thinks out the whole year as, how can I win pretty much everything throughout the year? But you're right. There are different variables between the seasons. In 2011, he had a better Nadal to face. You know, Nadal wasn't anything like this year. He wasn't anything like what he was in 2010, 2011. And he had a younger Federer. I don't know whether Federer is better in 2010, 2011 than he was this year. He was really good this year, but he was also 30, you know, he turned 34. So he didn't have either of those guys at their peaks, you know, that much you can say. But he did have two real, you know, this year he had two guys, the all-time, you know, Grand Slam leaders to beat, which is, you know, you have to say that's pretty good year competition-wise.
Yeah, and he catches them at two. And I think Federer, you know, for what it's worth, I think you could definitely make the case that Federer in 2015 was better than Federer in 2011. But it's a good point to make about both of those Djokovic opponents that he's played so well against. And you know, when we bring up the Federer 06 as really, you know, the comparison, because it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I remember watching, you know, most of these matches that Federer built that season on, and that people still kind of talk about lovingly in some cases, for, you know, as really the ideal Federer season. You know, I think it's a close call to make either way, and the margins are really slim. You can kind of be talked into either one. You know, one thing I like to do in these cases and all these little parlor talks is, I think in some sense you almost can throw the numbers out the window and the stats, and it's almost like an eye test, that catch-all term for, you know, when you're watching it, what do you, you know, who do you see as, you know, is really superior just by watching them play over an extended time. And that might be the only way that I would still tilt the scales to Federer in 2006, because it just seemed like at that time, you know, Djokovic is clearly far ahead of his opponents this season. There's no denying that. It still recalls to me that Federer was, you know, even perhaps a little further ahead at that time too. This is, you know, of course, before Rafa really turned a corner, and maybe that's a big thing, is that, you know, Federer may have been so far ahead of his opponents because, you know, Djokovic has better competition at this point. And that's where all these arguments are eventually going to go down to, and kind of why it's fun to talk about.
Yeah, I think Federer, you know, if you're watching the best shots of Federer from 2006 and the best shots of Djokovic in 2015, you're probably going to think Federer was the stronger player. Just he's you know, he's more of a highlight reel player. But I think Djokovic is, I think you have to differentiate between who looks the best and who's the toughest to play. You know, Federer was tough to play. He in 2006, obviously, but to me, Djokovic is less about a guy who you watch and think is amazing to watch. But when you imagine trying to play against him, it's to me, it's just as tough as playing Federer in 2006.
Go ahead.
The two seasons are really similar, amazingly similar. Three slams, both lost in the French final, both made the final of every tournament except one, both had twice as many ranking points as the next player. I would say, looking back, that I thought Federer may have had a little better competition than he had, but I forgot that Djokovic wasn't even around then, really.
No,
he wasn't in the top 10. That's the big difference, I guess. Djokovic has had to play Federer. Federer, really, among the top guys, just had Nadal, a young Nadal, who was better. I think Nadal that year was better than he was this year, but he hadn't reached his peak at that point. So there's a lot of different variables. But I was, you know, I think looking at the who played the players who will be the most, you know, the most Hall of Fame players and the players with the most other Grand Slams, Djokovic has the edge there for 2015.
Yeah, and I think I'll close in a way, because his name has been brought up so much in this discussion, is Rafa. And, you know, as amazing as these two seasons are, when you think back to, you know, when you think back to, okay, what's Rafa's, you know, best career year? You know, in terms of majors, you probably go with something like 2010, of course, when he wins three of them. But, you know, I still, as we're kind of just talking about history here, I still remember what we saw from Rafa in, you know, 2008, you know, that year, that ultimate breakthrough year. And, you know, when these three are going to be linked forever, you know, now and many, many generations down the road of players. And I don't think Rafa is ever going to be held up short to these two because of what he's amassed. But I think it's always worth remembering when we talk about peak Federer, peak Djokovic, peak Nadal might be in some ways still the toughest of all to beat. And it just kind of just speaks to, you know, where these three are at in terms of the all-time game.
He was tough. I was looking at his two big seasons, 2010, 2013, three slams, you know, totally dominant. But he didn't dominate as far as overall ranking points the way these guys did, the way Federer did in 2006 and Djokovic 2000. He wasn't so, you know, far ahead of the second guy. That's the one thing I would say. This Djokovic and Federer have just distanced themselves overall so much.
Yeah, it's clear as day with that, as you can see. Let's go, as I said earlier, WTA season very quickly winding down. Just over half the field for the WTA finals in Singapore has been settled by now. The final three spots to be determined this week. But I wanted to focus on, you know, who we know will be there. And, you know, of course, who we know will not be there, that's Serena Williams. And really kind of what this opportunity presents to the rest of that field. Simona Halep, Sharapova is playing. She's, you know, sent some photos over social media that she is in Singapore. So she'll be playing really for the second time in about four or five months. Hasn't played a full match since Wimbledon, retired, you know, in a brief showing in Wuhan. You have Petra Kvitova, you have Garbine Muguruza and Agnieszka Radwanska. All these players to me sort of scream like they could use this win pretty badly and you know, have a great chance to do it now.
Yeah, we know without Serena there becomes who can take advantage of that. The thing that seems interesting to me is we'll find out probably the winner of this will be the person we'd go into 2016 look saying this is the person who's going to challenge Serena. You know, if Kvitova wins, if Halep wins, if Sharapova wins, if well, maybe not Sharapova, but if
Luca
Russo wins, then they'll be, that person will be touted probably as, okay, here's the next Serena challenger. But is that person, is that player going to make it happen? Because it just seems like every year somebody comes out of this tournament looking good for the next year and just doesn't do it. Like Halep had an okay year this year, but she was the one last year. Li Na the year before, Azarenka has come out looking good. Kvitova won it one time, and none of them have really followed up and really challenged Serena the next year. So I don't know. You know, we'll see who the next person is on that list, and that'll be an interesting aspect of this tournament. But we won't know anything until next year, really.
Exactly. On that note, let's cut it for this week, and we'll return next week when we know the full field for the WTA Finals. For Steve Tigner and Ed McGrogan, thank you for listening to the Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.